Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, food followers around the world. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host, Ben Johnson. Remember, if you want to support this show, we have a donations link available via PayPal. Simply head over to paypal.me/Kung Fu Movie Guide to donate. This podcast is very much a one-man operation, so any donations you make will be greatly received and will be put back into the upkeep of this show. A huge thank you to anyone who has donated to the podcast already. That is fantastic. Thank you so much. To get in touch with the show, you can email me on hello@kungfumovieguide.com. We also have our social media accounts on Instagram and Facebook under the name @kungfumovieguide. We are also on YouTube and X, formerly Twitter, @KFMovieGuide. Keep up to date with all the new episodes of this show as they drop by subscribing wherever it is that you get podcasts. And if you do that, please do leave us a star rating or write a review. That all helps to spread the good word of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. You can also read the latest martial arts movie reviews, access our archive, and find all our contact information via the website kungfumovieguide.com. Thank you for listening to this episode, and now on with the show.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello there, food followers around the world, wherever you are in the world listening to this episode. Welcome to the show. This is the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, episode 94. That is incredible. There are 94 episodes of this podcast. That is mad. But what is equally mad is that it's taken this long to get Rick Myers onto the show, one of the leading authorities on Kung Fu movies in the USA and beyond. His books adorn the shelves of many a Kung Fu movie fan out there, including myself. And if you are listening to this, then chances are you do have a copy of Rick's 1985 book, Martial Arts Movies from Bruce Lee to the Ninjas. Maybe that's knocking around on your shelves. Maybe you also have the Encyclopedia of Martial Arts Movies or 2001's Great Martial Arts Movies from Bruce Lee to Jackie Chan and more. Or maybe you have a copy of 2011's Films of Fury. Fans of the Kung Fu Movie Guide from its origins as a blog way back in 2012 might remember that I did interview Rick way back then, and that is over 10 years ago, which is quite a frightening thought. Anyway, link to that original interview is available in the podcast description. This was great to catch up with Rick and chat in a bit more detail on what's been happening in his life over the last 10 years or so, but also what's been happening in the Kung Fu movie genre. I do love hearing Rick's opinions on movies, and he's still just as forthright and passionate now as he ever was. And this year he has celebrated his 70th birthday, so happy birthday, Rick. And he just seems busier now than he ever was. So that is all coming up on today's show. Another quick reminder to get your thoughts over to me on your favourite fight films of the year 2023. It's been another awesome year for martial arts action movies. We've had Donnie Yen's Sakura, not one but two Jackie Chan films. We've had Hidden Strike and Ride On. There's been a new Ninja Turtles movie, Extraction 2, Expendables 4, John Wick 4, Fist of the Condor with Marco Zarour, Knights of the Zodiac. I could go on and on. We've got a full list of the martial arts movies that were released this year available on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. I'll be sure to put a link to that list in the podcast description. Simply tell me which movies have been your favourites from the year and why, and your message could be read out on our special end of year show 2023, featuring your friend of mine, the action movie expert Mike Fury. We're actually recording the show next weekend, so there's still plenty of time to be a part of it. Simply send over your thoughts by email to hello@kungfumovieguide.com. You can also message the show via social media. We are on X, formerly Twitter, and Facebook and Instagram. Okay, it's Rick Meyer's time. This conversation was recorded over Zoom not too long ago. It was in late October of this year, 2023. I was here in London and Rick was at his home in Connecticut. Rick runs the annual Comic-Con Superhero Kung Fu Extravaganza every year in San Diego. He's been running that since 1997, so this year it celebrated its 26th edition. As well as his seminal works on the Kung Fu movie genre, Rick is also a prolific author of fiction. He's written over 70 novels, and a lot of them under pseudonyms. He wrote the official Dirty Harry book series. He was assistant editor of Atlas Comics in the 1970s. He was a long-standing contributor to Inside Kung Fu magazine, and he has generally been flying the flag for cult film, action and horror cinema for 5 decades now. And it was an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with Rick. There is a bit of swearing on this, so you have been warned about that. There's actually a massive F-bomb in there somewhere, but it is signalled, so you have been warned. Also, if you haven't watched John Wick Chapter 4 yet, and to be honest, if you are listening to this and you haven't seen it, then what are you doing here? But if you haven't watched it, then we do slightly spoil it a bit. So if you do hear that and you get annoyed about that, then sorry about that, but you have been warned. You may want to skip ahead when we start talking about John Wick Chapter 4, if you haven't seen the movie already. I will be back at the end of this conversation to sign off properly, but until then, here we go. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with the legendary Rick Meyers. I think when we first spoke, I think either you were just starting or you just started learning Kung Fu. How has it progressed over the last decade, Rick?
Well, the last decade has been spectacular. That's the great thing about Kung Fu, is that the more you learn it, the more you open your mind to it, your heart and your hands, the more powerful it becomes. And I agree with what Jet Li told me, that a Kung Fu student's only true opponent is themselves.
Yeah.
And I forgot, wasn't Jackie who said this, but it might have been Sammo. It was along the lines of, no, I think it was Jet again. Jet, Kung Fu is not about fighting, it's about health. It's about your health. Your biggest opponent is not another person, but germs. Yourself and a germ. What happened was, I saw the Bruce Lee movies back in the 70s, didn't speak to me because he was using his fist to cause himself and others pain. And that's one of the things I loved about Bruce, is in addition to his incredible charisma and his filmmaking prowess and his acting prowess, you'll notice that whenever he gets to a climactic emotional point when he's fighting someone else, he'll hit them and he'll make this face. He'll make this face.
Yeah.
And it's like what he said to me is that, yes, I've hurt this person, but I'm also hurting me. That's the whole idea. I'm mentally and physically hurt by my actions. And I sort of went, but the rest of it was whatever. So I started looking around for Kung Fu. My childhood, I was hurt physically and mentally, so I didn't want any of that. So I went to a karate class and they were teaching you how to punch each other. And one of my favorite moments is when I'm teamed up with someone and they say, all right, punch me in the face. Of course, not really. I just have to stop a couple of inches and then they would block. But I put my fist up to punch them in the face and they took my fist and moved it and said, not like that. And I'm going, yeah, I'm sure that'll happen in a fight.
That's going to happen in the street, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to happen. No, not like that. Don't punch like that. I would have stayed with judo because judo was just awesome. However, every single major student, veteran student in the class either had partial or no use of a major joint.
Yeah.
The other thing that school taught me was that if you're sparring, if the teacher is bold enough to have you spar, you're going to get hurt. because your opponent can't feel your pain. Mm. And especially people in martial arts, they don't seem to be very empathetic toward their opponent. Their opponent is someone to hurt and vanquish. And then finally, Larry Hama at Marvel Comics brought me to see Drunken Monkey in a Tiger's Eye when it opened in 1979. And I saw Jackie Chan. I went, okay, that's what I want to do. He's spending all his time trying to not to fight and also trying not only not to get hurt, but not to hurt his opponent. I mean, when he's dealing with death, when he's dealing with Wang Zhongli and stuff, yeah, he has to defeat them utterly. And, you know, Yun Wu Ping was choreographing, so he was also into the defeating your opponent. But when Jackie got onto his own, you saw him after, especially after he injured himself in Armor of God, he would almost never defeat his opponent. He would dump, he would literally, in some cases, dump them off screen.
Yeah, he's just evading, sort of trying to hurt people now, isn't he, really?
Yeah, he's trying to keep them from hurting themselves.
Yeah.
Jackie's one of the few people working today that the Chinese Film Bureau will allow him to do actual kung fu, because they feel Jackie is totally unique. So even in, like, Hidden Strike, his new movie with John Cena.
Which is good, let's say.
The fighting is good. Fighting is good. And Jackie is still doing it.
Yeah.
Jackie will always put in a moment where he's sorry. You know, he'll say sorry to his opponent, especially when they... And another thing he gets them to do is he lets them hurt themselves. Because this is what I taught in Kung Fu, the original Kung Fu Panda. Highest form of Kung Fu is not to fight, to make your enemy your friend. However, if someone is out to hurt themselves by trying to hurt you, as a Kung Fu student, you'll help them. But it took me a long time to learn that. It wasn't until I went to every place that I could find in the Northeast of America that said they were teaching Kung Fu, only to find out they weren't. They were teaching what I've always said: all martial arts, all Kung Fu, all life, in fact, is the human body, the human mind, the world around it. The rest is money and ego. But what happens with these teachers is they want to make a living. Bruce Lee shows up in 1973. Everybody goes, okay, I want to learn.
Ka-ching.
And so they sort of go, oh, yeah, we teach that. We teach that. We do. So it wasn't until ultimately I trained in karate, the judo, jiu-jitsu. All of it was hurting yourself and hurting others. It was all degenerative and destructive. I was looking for constructive and regenerative. And it wasn't until Inside Kung Fu sent me to Taiwan at the invitation of the Taiwanese tourist bureau to meet every single major Kung Fu teacher and maybe every single Kung Fu teacher in Taiwan, which I did over 3 weeks. And I met a Qigong teacher named Fong Song Li, who's still my Qigong teacher. And within 20 minutes, he taught me more than I had learned in the last 20 years.
You still train with him?
Oh, yeah. I still train every morning. That's why we're doing this recording at this time.
I was going to say, because you were training this morning, weren't you? So is that a daily routine for you?
I'm not training. I'm practicing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know, how do you know a Kung Fu master is not a Kung Fu master? When they say they're a Kung Fu master.
Yeah.
That's how you know they're not.
Do you think that it helps having at least a background or a basis in Kung Fu practice to appreciate the films a lot more?
Well, that's why I wrote Films of Fury, the documentary, and the book. Because I did two books on martial arts movies. Oh, thank you. Yay me. It's still selling.
Yeah,
after
10
years.
It's a great
book.
But
in any case, thank you. The reason I wrote that book, I had done the two other. I had done martial arts from Bruce Lee to the ninjas.
Yep.
I had done great martial art movies from Jackie Chan to Bruce Lee and more. And then I started, and those were written before 2001 when I went to Taiwan. And after I started learning Kung Fu, I started seeing especially La Kalyung's movies in a completely different way.
Yeah,
I started recognizing stuff that before I just thought it was dance. I thought it was the emotions of opera and the movements of ballet.
You can appreciate those films on that level as well, can't you? On a sort of surface level.
I did for decades.
Yeah.
Because it's just like watching a musical. You don't have to dance like Fred Astaire or Gene Kelly to appreciate a musical, or sing like John Travolta or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that to enjoy it. But if you understand, especially Kung Fu, it opens up a whole, it opens up literally, you suddenly start seeing the movie in three dimensions. And you go, whoa. And also what's great about Kung Fu, it's just like learning dance. The more you watch it, the more you see. The more you learn. You go, oh, I didn't see that. That's why I keep watching The Final Master over and over and over. Zhu Huafeng's older movie. Thankfully, he has a new movie that premiered at the Toronto Film Festival called 100 Yards, which my buddies at Welco USA got the American rights to.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, I'm going, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Because even in the trailer, I'm watching him do his thing, which is basically at elevated Kung Fu students. When you see them start to move, whenever they get into a conflict of any sort, it does look like magic. It looks like they're doing magic. And that's what Zhu, watch The Final Master, hopefully watch The 100 Yards when it comes out. It looks like they're doing magic.
Do you think he's one of the best kung fu filmmakers out there at the moment?
He's the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he had done three movies after Final Master, which the Chinese Film Bureau did not allow him to release.
Yeah, it was so strange. Yeah.
Well, it's completely understandable. Again, that's the other great thing about kung fu, because I keep saying smart, serene, strong, sympathetic. Those are the four S's. So that's what you want to do. If you seek, I agree with everything that Bruce Lee and Jesus Christ said. I agree with them. The only thing I seem to disagree on with Bruce Lee is that he says you want to stop the fight at its source. I agree with that, but I don't necessarily agree with what he considered the source. I felt that he thought the source was the beginning of the fight. My feeling is that if the fight starts, you've already failed. You've already lost if you have let the fight start. Zhu Huafeng is talking about that and many, many other things. He especially gets into, both in The Final Master and 100 Yards, the money and ego aspect. Because he talks about the fighting between schools.
Yeah.
So the Chinese Film Bureau, again, completely understandable. When you understand that they feel that they don't want 3 billion residents, 3 billion citizens of China to have open minds. They want them to follow orders. So they're always going to go for not kung fu, for martial arts. One of the nice things also about the Chinese Film Bureau is that the people who run it change every once in a while. And the government also changes its mind. You know, originally they said they couldn't have vampires in their movies, and they couldn't have guns in their movies after A Wolf Warrior 2. But now it seems they're loosening up a bit. Now, any second they can tighten. Also, they're allowing their actors like Donnie Yen to adapt.
Yeah.
They're trying to find their way. Donnie and all the other guys who are still working, Sammo, are still trying to find a way that they can compromise with the Chinese Film Bureau so they can keep making the movies they want to make.
It's interesting to see someone like Donnie Yen, who is still trying to straddle both of those worlds. And it was interesting when with John Wick 4, he didn't really do too much press over that as well. And I wonder if he must be very sensitive to what he says in the media. I would imagine it's a tricky tightrope, isn't it, I guess, in what you can and
It's not tricky at all. That's the thing that he's learning. The reason I know that Donnie is developing even more and learning more is that he's getting smarter. For decades, he wanted to be badass. And I keep on suggesting to my students that, no, you want to be good ass, smart ass, or wise ass. You want to be wise and smart about this. I'm not interested in how tough or badass someone is. I'm interested in how smart and effective they are. What was great about Kung Fu, Tai Chi, Qigong. And by the way, again, it's all the same.
Yeah.
I don't practice Wing Chun. I don't practice whatever. I practice life, basically. I practice kung fu. My style, I practice my style, which is called Rick Fu.
Yeah.
And this and the subtitle is "Don't Hurt Me."
Yeah.
Which I also have to say to myself all the time. I look in the mirror and go, "Rick, stop it. Stop hurting yourself, man. Come on."
Long pole expert. Shaolin garbage.
You've mentioned this a couple of times, but we don't have to dwell on this. But I know, I wondered, because you mentioned there around your sort of childhood and maybe sort of escaping some trauma from those years. I wondered if, you know, the cinema and writing and that creative side, was that a bit of a sort of escapism for you? That was a bit of a sanctuary?
Oh, yeah. Well, all of it was. Everything away from my mentally ill mothers was an escape. And that was everything from playing with my G.I. Joes and my soldiers to walking around. But what I did mostly back in the days, because I'm 70, is that I didn't see my first movie until I was like 6 years old, and my grandparents showed it to me. So what I did was read.
Yeah.
And I would read, I mean, I, not surprisingly, I read every science fiction and mystery book that was new and republished from 19, I started reading at 4 or 5, as I recall. And from the age of five to 19, so the age of five was 1958 to 1975, I read everything. I was reading five books a week at least. And it was mystery, because what was great about the mysteries, specifically the detective stories like Sherlock Holmes and Ellery Queen, stuff like that, is that they would find a problem and they would solve it. They would solve the problem. And that put me on the direction of my own life of, you know, solving the mystery of my life and the way I worked. And science fiction, which was imagination, which was a total escape. I became a member of the Science Fiction Writers of America, the member of the Mystery Writers of America. I've written 75 published books, more than 75 at this point. And in every genre except romance, if you look me up, and you have to find my pseudonyms like Wade Barker and Dane Hartman Brian Swift and other guys. I have a bunch. The last 10 years, I've done at least 7 novels, none with my name on the cover. And I just have a book coming out in May of 2024 that is probably the biggest book I've ever done. I'm just flattered that I get to the age of 70 and I'm now working with the biggest publisher in the world. Also, I'm still doing comic books. I'm still doing DVDs. Much to my amazement, they just released the Volume 3 Shaw Brothers classic set.
Yeah.
And they put a documentary featuring me on one of their discs. And
right.
I haven't done that in a long time because, DVD audio commentary is done. Been there, done that, done that well, but also done that not as well as I would have liked. But now Frank Jang invited me onto the Vinnerka Syndrome DVD of Magic Crystal.
Great.
I'm back doing those too.
Yeah.
And also documentaries. Grady Hendrix invited me onto Iron Fist and Kung Fu Kicks documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a crew in Brooklyn is doing a documentary on me now. So, I just like having fun.
You're described as the most influential voices in martial arts cinema across the USA. I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to think of anyone that was writing on this subject before you. Anyone who's a Kung Fu movie fan has your books and has had them on there. They've been a staple of their shelf for many years.
I'm first with an asterisk, because there was another book that came from one of my publishers, A.S. Barnes, called The Martial Art Movie, I think it was called.
Right.
But it really wasn't. It was martial arts, but it wasn't Asian martial arts.
Yeah,
It was a swordplay movies, but like Robin Hood and stuff like that.
You were around in the States during that 70s kung fu boom. When you started seeing Jackie Chan's movies, you jumped in like headfirst into all of that Shaw Brothers.
Well, that's what led to the first book. I mean, the martial art movie book, because by then I had written a book on science fiction films, on fantasy films, on TV detectives. These were award-nominated books, and I enjoyed them. So I had publishers, Citadel Press and A.S. Barnes. I went to see Drunken Master. I literally went right to the publisher, who was in New York, and said, I want to do a book on these things. Mm. And they went, go ahead. We'll give you $750. And they did, and I did. And at that time...
Simple as that.
For me, at that time, yeah, I entered the book business at the best possible time. Yeah. Because they had to fill slots in the bookstores, and I was there going, and they knew I was fast, and I was eager, and I would give them something they could publish. That's, if you want to be a writer, guys, that's the one secret you've got to learn. Give them something they can use. So don't make it about you, make it about them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my motto. What can I do for you? Not what can you do for me? What can I do for you?
Yeah.
And it still works. I don't give them something that's all about me. I give them some, well, actually I do, because you know, if you've read martial art movies from Bruce Lee to the ninjas, it's not really a scholarly book in any way. What it is, look at this stuff. Yeah. Isn't this stuff great?
Unless you were going to sort of the grindhouse theaters and seeing old Shaw Brothers movies, like how was the general public, how would they have known about a lot of these movies? Like, you were introducing a genre of films that just had completely bypassed the sort of mainstream media.
No, again, the timing was perfect because World Northall was putting out Black Belt Theater, a package of syndicated Shaw Brothers movies that went on syndicated television all over America.
Right.
And that was happening at that moment.
Right.
And they had an office across the street from my publisher. And when I found that out, I walked right in and said, I want to do a book on these things. And they went,
yes.
They basically did their version. They fell to their knees and kissed my ring.
Yeah.
They gave me a ring. Then they kissed it.
Yeah.
And then Ocean Shores. Ocean Shores was the first Hong Kong company who was trying to distribute VHS Kung Fu movies in America. And again, when I found out about them and they found out about me, they sort of went, whatever you want. They're the ones who brought me to Hong Kong for the first time to be at their offices for 3 weeks to make two VHS documentaries, which is This is Kung Fu and Ninja Mania. They introduced me to Wong Long Wai. They set up an introduction with Raymond Chow and Jackie Chan in the early 80s, right after. And I became friendly with Jackie. I mean, do you know that story? Did I tell you that story about I'm brought to Jackie Chan's office at Golden Harvest in Hong Kong. And he's having an argument with one of his producers. And he turns and he sees me, this big white guy, and goes, you, come here. And I comes over here. And he puts his arm around my shoulder and he says, who's the best person to direct me in an American movie? And I said, well, obviously you. And he went and he looked at the producer. He turned me toward the producer and he went, tell him that.
You've spoken to Jackie quite a bit over the years. I mean, when was the last time you spoke to Jackie, Rick?
The last time, I think, was 2008.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last truly serious time we spoke was in 2001, when he was making The Medallion. He had been inviting me to premieres. I went to the premiere of The Accidental Spy.
Mm.
And I basically said, man, you are so talented. You don't have to try so hard. You're constantly trying to prove that you're just as fast as you always were. But of course, in Kung Fu, you don't have to be fast.
I want that medal, or I'll take your life.
Do you still see stuff in those old movies then, Rick? Do you still refer back to some of the Lao Ga Leung stuff? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially Legendary Weapons of China and Heroes of the East.
Brilliant.
The rest of the ones he's usually, because those things are Kung Fu movies.
Yeah,
he would specialize. Of course, he would do one on Shaolin Mantis. He would do one on Monkey Kung Fu.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. He would, and Jackie would do the same. I mean, Drunken Master and A Tiger's Eye was the original title. So they would get into specifics, which is understandable. But also, Jackie would do this great thing was, whenever he would did Snake in the Eagle Shadow, and Drunken Master, he'd always end it by developing a new technique, which was him. Because again, Bruce Lee was right. Learn everything you can from everyone you can, then make it your own.
Yeah.
Bruce was all about getting better.
Yeah.
And everybody, what I call the fan ghouls, are all about keeping him where he is, keeping him down, keeping back. Don't learn anything more. Stay exactly at
when all those clone Bruce Lee clone movies were coming out in the 70s. What were you a fan of those?
I enjoyed them. I understood, because I love Bruce so much, that Bruce would have hated them.
Yeah,
but that's okay. It still had better kung fu than anything I could find in America.
Yeah, that's true.
And also Bruce Liang, Bruce Le, these guys were talented. I felt bad for them. As a matter of fact, my buddy Frank Jang, co-creator and co-host of the San Diego Comic-Con Kung Fu Extravaganza, now in its 28th year,
incredible,
has co-produced the Enter the Clones of Bruce documentary.
Yeah, I've seen it, Rick. It's fantastic.
It's
brilliant.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And they're also fair about it. You know, they had to balance playing to the fan ghouls, but also telling the truth about these movies.
Well, you feel sorry for particularly Bruce Lai. I mean, he loved Bruce Lee, and then I guess he's always going to be known as the guy that was doing this sort of pale imitation of him. And I think he's always had to wrestle with that reality and the legacy that he's left behind as all these sort of dodgy films, you know, that are seen as slightly insulting in a way, but, you know.
Well, not just slightly, completely insulting.
But that's I was trying to be polite.
You come to the wrong place.
Yeah.
The thing that bothered me is that they not only were insulting to Bruce, they were insulting to me. But they weren't insulting, but they don't care about me. I've always said with my dear female friend, Kate, we're a market share of one. So no one cares about us. They want to play to the crowd.
Yeah.
And the crowd, you can never fail with Bruce. Bruce is still an icon. But probably because he is stuck in aspect. All you have to do is put Bruce in it, people will come.
We've got this Ang Lee biopic coming along now as well.
Oh, and I'm hoping so much for that.
How do you feel about that?
Well, that's the thing. I never look at the person in front of the camera. I always look at the person behind the camera.
Yeah.
So if it's Ang Lee, it's got the possibility of being reputable and respectful and smart and insightful.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's got the possibility of being smartass. It's got the possibility of being wiseass.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I'm just fingers crossed.
It seems that he is incredibly resilient. You know, it's been 50 years, Rick, and there's still new stuff that's being produced. It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it's understandable because nobody else has advanced. There's no question in my mind, Bruce is the best. I cannot imagine. I mean, even I don't include Game of Death because that was an awful insult, but and an abomination. Especially since they could have made a great one. He had all the footage. They had the footage, and also they had his plan. He had the whole plan for the movie. He had the two Chinese co-stars who they cut out. They could have made something that was respectful and something that would make everyone cry at the end. But nope, they made it. You know, we're just going to collect the money, and also we're also going to show our disrespect to Bruce. I always call Game of Death Raymond Chow's revenge, because Bruce did not treat him well. And that's the other issue, something that I've discussed with Brandon, with Linda, and one of the reasons that I don't do a lot of speeches at their dinners. I was supposed to do a big speech at the first memorial Bruce Lee dinner in Seattle, and Linda said, would you mind not doing it? And I said, no, I completely understand, because I was going to talk about his Hong Kong years. And that was something that she does not want to be brought up and does not want to remember, because the true tragedy of Bruce is that he didn't practice what he preached. He essentially destroyed himself. And it, you know, if he had gotten to the Jet Li stage and gotten over and solved his ego problem, again, money and ego, he would have lived forever. He'd still be around.
Yeah.
But no, he destroyed himself.
All right. Let me try some of your kung fu.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kung Fu consultant on movies. I mean, in particular, Kung Fu Panda, they asked you to visit DreamWorks. You went to DreamWorks Studios. Is this correct?
Yeah.
And you, yeah.
Well, it happened. Oh, they would come. I would do the Kung Fu extravaganza at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I would do it. We started it in like 1998 or something.
Yeah. And still going.
Unbeknownst
I've got to
me,
make it out there for one of them. I still haven't been. I know.
Hurry.
Next year.
Hurry. The genre is shrinking. I'm getting older.
Yeah.
And guess what I brought back from the San Diego Comic-Con this year? COVID. Anyway, so, but be that as it may, thankfully, the Kung Fu helped enormously for that.
Yeah.
That was amazing. But in any case, so I, unbeknownst to me, all these really great people were coming to the Kung Fu Extravaganza, and they would go back, and there were a bunch of DreamWorks animators who saw it and came back. And they were working on, like, in 2000, and the movie came out, I think, in 2008. So I think this was 2006.
Mm-hmm.
They came back and said, you've got to get this guy to come and talk to us. So they got in touch with me and said, could you come visit us? I said, of course. And it's a long and wonderful story. But basically, I came. I was brought up to their offices. What I found out at that time at DreamWorks, there was Shrek and Slums. There were Shrek and Slums. And Kung Fu Panda, since it hadn't come out yet, was in the slums.
Yeah.
Kung Fu Panda, it was still the very first movie DreamWorks made, which was not an attempt to sabotage or denigrate Disney.
Mm.
It's the very first one that was wholly original.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down with them and I said, so, have you done any research? And they said, yeah, we watched Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
And I went, okay.
Oh, dear.
You're making a baseball movie and you're watching football films.
Yes, yeah.
Let me show you some baseball movies. I had all my films from the Kung Fu Extravaganza, and I started showing them. I mean, I started showing them my favorite. I mean, very first one, the Magnificent Butcher calligraphy fight.
Mm, brilliant.
Very first fight scene. Yeah, of course. I showed them only the most brilliant stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I wanted their eyes to be going boom.
Yeah.
And so by the end of it, they're going, could you stay on for the entire production, please? And I sort of went, sure, I don't mind. At that time, they didn't have directors. They had producers and animators. And because, again, I'd like to think with my help and my influence, they got one animation director and they got one animation director who took Kung Fu, John Stevenson. Mark Osborne was the great artistic animator director, and John Stevenson knew Kung Fu better than I did. So we worked together extremely well. And also, he taught everybody what Kung Fu was. Because again, you notice in Kung Fu Panda 2, no Kung Fu in the movie.
Mm.
It all goes right back to BS fists and nonsense. But in his, I mean, just very, 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 very smart stuff. And also accurate. It's still it's the best Kung Fu movie ever made in America. It's still, strangely enough, the most accurate one.
Well, it's a message. It's a powerful message, isn't it? Because the whole point, he's trying to find, you know, what's the key to be the most powerful, you know, Kung Fu guy around here? And, you know, the big reveal, obviously, is that, you know, there is no secret. It's just he's got it in himself. Yeah, exactly.
It's in you. But that's also not the other secret. Big kung fu teachers will always react in the movie the same way that everyone else in the audience doesn't react to, which is there's a moment where Tai Lung tries to get Po, and Po catches him in the wuxi finger hold.
Yeah, the finger hold. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Po, and Tai Lung goes, "Wuxi finger hold, did Shifu teach you that?" And Po says, "No, I figured it out." And that's the moment where that's how you can tell a real kung fu master. A real kung fu master will cheer and applaud when Po says, "No, I figured it out." In martial arts, that means a red belt. That means you get a red belt. No belts in kung fu. But what happens next, which is where Kung Fu Panda 2 goes really wrong, is at the end of Kung Fu Panda 2, he says skadoosh, but he says it after he catches a cannonball, which is like, again, just so incredibly stupid. Skadoosh is not something physical. It is not something martial. He says skadoosh because he had just taken his next step on the road to enlightenment. Because that's when he brings down his pinky, he says skadoosh. That's why there's that big energy burst. Because he had just taken his next step on the road to enlightenment. Because that's the goal of kung fu. Kung fu is not about fighting. It's about not fighting. Mm-hmm. It's about making your enemy your friend.
I've killed many men with this pole, but still, I don't want to kill you yet.
Rick, I've got to pick up on something that you just said there around the Comic-Con events. You said, yes. You know, hurry up and get over there because the numbers are dwindling. Is that correct?
Look, we pride ourselves. Thankfully, Frank is doing all these remasters now.
Yeah.
88 Films, Eureka, Shout Factory, Vinegar Syndrome, all Criterion now. They're all remastering the classics.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? There's a limited amount of classics. Nobody's making new classics. I was hoping Zhu Wao Feng would be able to make new classics. But no, they can only get away with what China will let them get away with. Because we don't have, and also all the great kung fu choreographers, Yun Wu Ping, Sammo Hung, Jackie, and many others, the kid who played in Enter the Dragon, his name.
Tong Wei,
yes, Stephen Tong Wei. They're all getting older.
Yeah.
And also the other thing is that I've spoken to Yu Wu Ping and Jackie Chan on these American sets, and they won't admit this, but I will admit it for them, and they'll just sort of go, which is when they come to American productions, they will not tell the Americans how to do it. They will do whatever the Americans tell them to do. Stephen Fung told me this about Into the Badlands. He said the only thing they wanted me to do is make it look cool. They don't care about the foundations for it. They don't care about the whole they don't care about motivations. I mean, when I was writing the Dirty Harry novels, my editor brought me in and said, could you take out all that psychology? You know, I said, so basically you want Harry to go into a men's room, pull down his zipper, pull out his .44 Magnum and shoot the toilet. He goes, yeah. They didn't want anything behind it. They wanted just shooting the gun, which is why we've gotten to the state of action movies that we're in at the moment, which is why they're getting soft at the box office, I think. You know, the new Mission Impossible, the new Fast and Furious, the Indiana Jones. Oh,
yeah, I've not seen that yet. I've avoided it. Yeah.
But again, all these stuff is what I call physiology-free. Oh, John Wick 4. The only way I could appreciate John Wick 4 was as a musical and because the opening speech in John Wick 4 is the opening quote from Dante's Inferno. And the opening quote from Dante's Inferno is Virgil bringing Dante to to the seven circles of hell, which is what John Wick does in John Wick 4, which explains why everyone's impervious. There are no cops everywhere. Nobody gets hurt. Nobody gets scratched. I mean, because it is my theory is, and of course, the studio is not going to follow my theory, but Keanu Reeves is, which is John Wick died at the end of the last one when he went off the ceiling of
certainly looked like he did.
Yeah, he went off the Continental roof. He fell 10 stories. He bounced off a steel fire escape. He landed face first on asphalt.
Yeah.
And that killed him. This new movie, if you watch it with that understanding, the only blood in the entire movie is at the opening of the movie where John is practicing again with his stupid fist and hurting himself. Mm-hmm. He's hitting the board, hurting himself. But the rest of the movie was bringing him through the seven circles of hell. And at the end, what happens? He finds peace.
Yeah, yeah.
He lays down and finds peace. Now, Lionsgate is not going to let that stand. They're not going to let that remain because they set up John Wick 4 so the sequel would be about Donnie Yen's blind swordsman. That's what they set up. Keanu will simply say, no, I'm too old. Keanu's smart enough to say, let me move on.
Yeah.
Because you know, usually the studios go, we'll just throw more money at you.
Yeah.
Keanu's one of those guys, and that's why I have that book up there. That's the John Wick book.
Yes.
And the history of gung fu.
Yeah.
Ed Gross keeps bringing me in on his, he also brought me in on his James Bond book. They're all oral histories. James Bond, Star Wars, Superman. But this was my favorite because he let me write the entire history of gung fu, which I may or may have, you know, again, I apologize because this is my ego talking. I was in Hong Kong the night that A Better Tomorrow premiered. I met John Woo the previous day. He signed a poster for me.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was a drama about school teachers because that's what the poster looked like. The movie was sold out. They found one seat at 10 o'clock at night on the other side of Hong Kong Island. I saw it. I saw everything change. And I turned to all the members of Film Workshop who had arranged all this for me. And I said, that's not kung fu. That's gung fu. And to my knowledge, because I was working as the entertainment editor for Inside Kung Fu magazine at that time, and also was still doing my books, I don't know if I was the first one to say that in print. I don't know if I, because my attitude is that anyone who saw Better Tomorrow and had any wise ass or smart ass in them at all would say, that's gung fu.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, that because that's even Keanu says that term a lot, and people say that as if it's a new thing, but that term's been around for a very long time, and it all goes back to John Woo, doesn't it?
Well, not all. Actually, I talk about the predecessors in this book. Mm. It all goes back to actually Japanese samurai cinema.
Yeah.
Because I say gung fu is the nature, just like sword fu, which is. Gung fu is just a great phrase, though. It's so perfect.
Yeah.
It's so perfectly encapsulated. But you can tell gung fu from just what I call bullet porn or gun porn because of the character's relationship to his weapon. John Wick and Chow Yun-fat and John Woo have a relationship with the gun because the gun has been around since the very beginnings of cinema. The gun has been a, if you'll excuse, I can swear, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The gun in cinema has become a fucking tool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I'm tired of the way they treat cars in movies. I'm tired of the way they treat guns in movies. I'm tired of the way they treat fists in the movie. Because the movies tell you that it's physiology free. Can't hurt you. None of this can hurt you. I'm working with an amazing guy right now who is one of the great Green Berets of all time. And he can attest that every single time he pulled the trigger and that bullet hit something, it made a scar in his own brain.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing that John Wick does better than everybody else is reload.
Yeah.
That's what he does brilliantly.
Very cool.
Very cool. And also, every single, you can count the number, you know how many rounds each of the weapons that, because as soon as he runs out of rounds, he reloads.
Yeah, yeah.
If he has a 7-round clip, if he has a 15-round clip, After 7, after 15, they'll reload. Yeah,
it's a great little detail, that. But also the gun in American culture, and then in American cinema, it's always been the enemy of the kung fu movie, hasn't it, really? And that is probably why kung fu movies, why America hasn't maybe produced as many great kung fu movies. Would you agree with that?
No, because, no, not at all. They don't do it because they don't understand kung fu at all.
Yeah.
They think it's martial arts.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things, one of my Tai Chi teachers, one of the most powerful Tai Chi teachers I'd ever seen, when somebody pulled the gun on him, he said, "Oh, you brought me a gun." Basically, we learn that if someone wants to hurt themselves by trying to hurt us, we, as a kung fu student, will help them do so.
Mm.
And that means that when they pull out a weapon, we already know where this person is coming from. If they pull out a knife, that's different.
Yeah.
In other words, a gun kind of, makes, not me. If I get to a place where somebody pulls a gun on me, oh, I've already failed. I just be going, "Oh, buddy, do what you want, because I can't believe I let you do that."
Mm.
But can I buy you a beer? You seem upset.
Yeah.
So no, they're not making good kung fu movies in America because they do not understand what kung fu is. Again, they're trying to serve the Bruceploitation audience, not even the Bruce Lee audience, the Bruceploitation audience, which is, let's make it badass, let's make it tough. You can see the difference of Chow Yun-Fat in John Woo's movies and in the American movies he made, in The Replacement Killers and stuff like that. They film him completely differently. In those movies, he's always humble, he's always humorous, he's always kind of even a little shy.
Yeah.
But in the American movies, he's a big fucking badass.
Yeah.
He's the biggest tiger in the valley kind of crap. Complete misunderstanding of what the form is.
Yeah.
Jet Li told me this, which is, he said, the difference between me working in America and working in Hong Kong is, in Hong Kong, we have 1 month to make the movie. We spend 3 weeks on the action, 1 week on the drama. In America, we spend 1 week on the action, 3 weeks on the drama. So again, that's why the fighting in American movies and American television shows are so familiar, are so physiology-free, so video game-like, because that's super easy. And that's why everybody... The speech I made at Disney was called The Art of Screen Action, where I said everybody should fight in character. You should know the person from how they fight.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see that. When you have a young woman, I remember Dove Cameron was playing somebody, I think, on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and she was fighting an older man. They fought exactly the same.
Yeah.
You could have switched their heads without affecting the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I said in the speech, if you can switch their head without affecting the fight, it's not a good fight.
Yeah.
If you can watch the entire fight and feel nothing as a viewer, it's not a good fight.
Mm.
It's what I call empty movement.
Good, good. You're clever, but not clever enough, because now you will die.
Hey. Are you optimistic at all in what the future holds, I guess, from what you see
yes.
in sort of modern action films?
Well, I've been watching movies for, at least 60 years at this point.
Yeah.
And as every single one of those thousands, if not millions of movies, have they all been great? No, they haven't. So yes, of course I have hope, because the Koreans, the Japanese, and to a degree, the guys who make streaming movies for the Chinese market, every once in a while, they'll come up with something that makes me go, ooh.
That's very true, ooh, yeah. Yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah. Ooh. And Wildgo are actually quite good at picking those up, actually, and releasing those. So you do still occasionally see the odd kung fu movie, one that sort of turns your head then, Rick.
No, I see all of them. I see them all.
Yeah.
I only enjoy one or two, depending on what they're doing. Oh, yeah, Ballerina. But it's not the John Wick spinoff, Ballerina. It's a Japanese. And the opening fight in that, one of the best fights I've seen, because usually when I see these female-led action movies that they've been doing a lot, the women always fight like the men do. And I'm going, no, not smart.
Mm.
Because no matter how tough you want to be, your literal biology is not the same. Your muscle mass is not the same. So why should you be so stupid as to use this? You should be smarter. And this young lady in Ballerina, ooh, nice.
Yeah. You must be encouraged as well, Rick, to see, say, like a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, picking up so many Oscars. I mean, you know, that the martial arts directors there were, you know, they started off as YouTubers, you know, the Lee brothers. That's really encouraging where you're seeing this sort of a new generation of talent that's coming through. Yeah.
Well, new generation is always good, but Hollywood is still Hollywood. You're pretending that Everything Everywhere All at Once is unique. Do you remember another little film called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened after that? Do you remember another little film called Thelma and Louise?
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened after that? This is what happens. I've worked out in Hollywood. I'm still working in Hollywood. But the reason I live on the East Coast and not in Hollywood, I had my opportunity to stay in Hollywood. But I wrote my second science fiction novel, Return to Doomstar, in Hollywood. It's the worst novel I've ever written because it's so superficial.
Yeah.
Because I felt the energy coming in. Here's what I discovered. Because I was working with Columbo and Murder, She Wrote, and Twilight Zone. Cool stuff. However, I found out that they are in the minority. Ultimately, Hollywood attracts people who are power mad, because, you know, it's a great place for people who are power mad. Every single film crew or television crew that I've ever met all over the world are awesome. They're always excellent because they're replaceable. If they screw up even for a second, they are replaced. Mm-hmm. However, everybody above the line, not even really the writers, but the producers, the actors, the directors, 80% of them, again, I'm reversing, 20% of them are geniuses. And I've been very lucky to work with them. But I've also worked with the 80%. And the 80% are venal, backstabbing assholes.
Yeah.
They really are. They are there to destroy your dreams. They are there to destroy your dreams. Mm. They are there to have power over you. I tell you, if you get a chance to watch the live-action Mulan on Disney+, they have special behind-the-scenes featurettes. Watch the ones that have the producers talking. Mm. When you see the producers of the live action Mulan talk, all I see is, you know, I hear echoes in their brains. I hear echoes in their skulls. Hello, hello, anybody home? It's astonishing. Yeah. So the situation is that what's happening now, I mean, I love wokeism. I'd like to do woke food. Because that's the one great thing that woke is doing. It is bringing people like the Daniels in. And hopefully, slowly but surely, permeating the likes of the Daniels into the 80%. Hopefully the ratio will become 75-25, then 70-30, and maybe even 50, maybe even during my lifetime, which is unlikely, 50-50 someday. Mm. But what happened after Thelma and Louise, what happened after Crouching Tiger, the 80% coalesced and started to sabotage, started to undercut. And also another thing that's kind of preventing them is the sheer amount of entertainment available to us now.
Does it feel like a bit of a saturated market then, do you think? All these streaming platforms finding content.
Yes, yeah. But that's lowering the Netflix lowers the expectation of the viewer. So it's harder to sabotage the great ones, because we're used to all this mediocre work. Did you see the sequel to Crouching Tiger?
Yeah, it wasn't quite right, was it? It wasn't great.
Wasn't even close.
Yeah.
But that's what they turn them into pod people. They turn these things into pods, and they reduce. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so happy by seeing these new horror slasher movies, which are smarter. Things like Freaky and Happy Death Day to You and Malignant and Barbarian. I'm very happy to see those, because it used to be that they would make horror movies at a certain quality level because they don't want their audience to expect more. That's why the third Nightmare on Elm Street was bad for them, because Dream Warriors raised the expectation of the audience that the sequel to Dream Warriors would be better than Dream Warriors. They said, no, we've got to cut that down right now. Producers don't want to have to work hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to make movies without having to do a really good one every time.
Yeah.
So when they find a genre like slasher movies where, and like Bruceploitation, where the audience will take whatever crap you give them, they embrace it. They champion it. They don't want, you know, that's why no one has followed Bruce Lee, because Bruce Lee was exceptional. So it's much easier to deal with Bruce Lee and Bruce Le and Bruce Liang and all these guys, because, and also, again, it's show business. They want an audience that will take whatever crap they give them. But thankfully, there are filmmakers who are saying, I'm going to take James Wan and others. I'm going to do better. I have to admit, in the new, the one that just came out with, Expendables 4.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They have Iko Uwais and Tony Jaa.
Tony Jaa, yeah.
Tony Jaa has never been happier in his life.
Yeah, he's having a lot of fun.
Oh, my God, and it's about time, because he was so miserable
back
in Thailand, because I interviewed him for both Ong Bak 1 and Ong Bak 2, and he was so unhappy.
Mm.
And so now I see him in this, and he does, when he's happy, he does really good work.
Yeah.
Expendables 4 is the very definition of dumb fun. Forget
underlined dumb.
But underlined fun for the last quarter of the movie. Just fast forward to the last quarter.
When
I love Jason Statham too. He's one of my favorite martial arts guys. Jason will always do what Jason does. He's not going to let people water down his work.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last quarter, when he faces Iko, and when he partners up with Tony, just watch that.
Yeah.
Forget everybody else. Just watch those guys and rewatch them and rewatch them and rewatch them.
It's impossible. How can you last this long? Don't you know? We're horse trainers.
You've covered the kung fu genre so much over your life. Is there more to say? Will we get another book or a movie or what?
Well, as you've noticed, I can talk about kung fu forever.
Yeah.
And I will talk about kung fu. And if people, I would love at this point for people to do screenings of the kung fu classics with me, or invite me to do commentaries on these kung fu classics to just talk about the kung fu.
Yeah.
Because Frank Jang can take care of who produced that and who wrote
this. He's
got
all the names and the history.
He knows the history. I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
And if I did, it went right through my brain. But what I do know is that I know more about kung fu now than a majority of the people I know other than my teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to get my teachers, Rick Barrett. I probably can't get Fong Song Lee from Taiwan. I'd love to get them and do that.
Mm.
That's something I would love to do. And of course, Hope Springs Eternal, again, 100 Yards is coming out. So there's going to be, I love, basically, it's easy to judge what I like, which is great. My favorite food, great food. My favorite movies, great movies. My favorite clothes, great clothes. My favorite barber, a great barber.
Yeah.
So basically, again, life to me is kung fu, the human body, the human mind, the world around it, rest is money and ego. So I'm going to be watching every action movie. Matter of fact, at the end of the month, every month on that Fat Samurai Guy's YouTube channel, I do the action film autopsy.
Yeah, I've watched it.
I talk about every action movie that came out that month. So I'll still watch everything.
Yeah.
But do I have hope? I always have hope. Do I have expectations? You're going to need great kung fu practitioners, which China is not happy about at the moment. You're going to need great choreographers, new choreographers. So the likelihood of that happening, however, martial arts will be with us forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I hope that kung fu will remain alive.
Yeah.
But real kung fu, and also the people who taught me. And also, if you want me to teach you, I can teach you. Just let me know.
Rick, thanks so much for this. I'm sure we'll touch base again in the new year.
All right. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Rick Myers there, the great Rick Myers, Kung Fu Santa, as he is sometimes referred to. That is his alias on That Fat Samurai Guy's YouTube channel. Link to that in the description. You'll find lots of Rick Meyer's reviews and opinions on that channel. Thank you, Rick. That was a great conversation. A few notes just off the back of that. So Xu Huafeng is the genius Chinese film director which we mentioned, director of The Final Master. His new movie is called 100 Yards. It got its international premiere at this year's Toronto International Film Festival. It has been picked up by Wowgo USA for North American distribution, which is great news. The John Wick book that Rick has contributed to, that is called They Shouldn't Have Killed His Dog, the complete uncensored ass-kicking oral history of John Wick, Gun Fu and the New Age of Action. It's by Edward Gross. It is available wherever you get books. I'll be sure to put a link to that title in the podcast description. I'll also be sure to add links to all of Rick's Kung Fu movie books so you can pick up copies of those if you don't already have them. I'll also link to our review of Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks. That's a superb documentary from 2019. Rick is interviewed in that documentary. The calligraphy fight from The Magnificent Butcher, that was mentioned during the chat. That is the classic 1979 Yen Wuping and Sammo Hung movie. It's superb. The fight scene itself features Li Hoisang and Quan Tak Hing. Classic Kung Fu at its finest. Link to that fight scene in the podcast description. And finally, a quick correction. The movie that Rick mentioned there, Ballerina, that is a Korean movie. It's out now on Netflix. It's a pretty good movie, so do go and check out Ballerina if you haven't seen that yet. Rick has also sent me a link to his eBay seller's accounts. He's under the name Chimera Publishing, and you can actually purchase lots of very interesting goodies, from a life spent collecting movie-related memorabilia. So there's signed photos, there's books and posters, loads of cool nerdy stuff. I noticed a signed Five Venoms poster on there. It's selling for $700, so if you've got that kicking around, then you could get hold of a signed Five Venoms poster. Anyway, lots of cool stuff on there. I'll be sure to put a link to that also in the description. And that is about it for today's episode. A huge thank you to Rick Myers for taking the time to talk to me for this episode of the show. And a huge thank you, of course, to you, the loyal Foo follower, who has listened to this episode to the very end. That is fantastic. Thank you so much. Your reward will be, you guessed it, another brand new episode, which will be landing in 2 weeks' time. Until then, stay safe, be well, take care, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.